Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
Yes, we're back. The first Viewpoint of 2019. Good morning to you. The time is exactly 4 minutes past ten. This is Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme with a panel of invited guests where we discuss the issues of the day. Phone number today is 94. The phone number, as always, is 952-78-4000. Studio at tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page, if you wish to leave a post, is Talk Radio Europe Official, and you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. On today's show, going to be doing a quick rundown overview of what took place. It's been 2 weeks since we were last on air, so we'll be having a look at the progress or otherwise with Brexit, what happened over the Christmas period with that, obviously the refugee or the crisis that affected the UK in terms of migrants crossing the English Channel. It was called a crisis. Do we need to rethink that? Also, looking at yesterday's events in the UK in terms of preparing for a no-deal Brexit, what that means. Also, further afield, the US government and its federal shutdown. Trump still pressing for the wall. We'd like to hear your views on where we are in terms of that. And also, I'll be asking the panel to look into their crystal balls. Careful how you say it. The guys and my panels look into the crystal balls and see what is coming up, what they foresee for 2019. I'm joining the studio. We'll go right to left today in all meanings of the word, starting off with John Harper. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning.
Good to have you back with us. Alf Brewer is back with us.
I'm glad I'm not to the left today.
Exactly. I don't,
which is your left, John?
Yeah, but you're on my left. So Alf, you're
think,
on my left.
I think
John
we know
Harper.
Politically where yes. we all stand. But, exactly. And I'm not very good at forecasting, so I ain't going to say Happy New Year. I'll just say I wish everybody a great New Year.
Right then. Diplomatic as always. Start how you mean to go on, Alf. And great to have you in the studio as well. Juan Carlos Gallocho. Juan, good morning to you, Juan Carlos.
Good morning and Happy New Year to all of you.
952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official, and you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. We'll be looking at that breaking news on the screen in a little while, John. So, looking at the front pages of the papers in the UK, many of the front pages carry press reaction. Carry reaction to the new 10-year plan for the NHS in England, with concerns over the services staffing crisis and digital consultations becoming the norm for patients. The Daily Mirror headlines the story as a Tory NHS revolution that is the wrong medicine. It says the plan will bring smartphone appointments and Skype consultations, when experts who have worked in frontline services say the real need is for thousands more staff. The iNewspaper focuses its coverage on the plan's grand ambition to plug the hole in the workforce. Its front pages evokes the famous Lord Kitchener recruitment poster, reporting the world's doctors and nurses are being told the NHS needs you. Meanwhile, millions of NHS patients to see doctor by Skype is the headline in the Times. The Leader column says the new money is being made available to the NHS under the plan will lead it out of the desert, but hardly into the land of milk and honey. The paper adds there are reasons to hope it may succeed where previous reforms have failed. But the key question is management up for it? Telegraph leads with a claim that British and European officials are exploring a delay to Brexit as the Prime Minister heads towards crucial Commons vote on her deal. The paper says despite the government insisting it has no intention of asking for an extension to the negotiation period, three separate EU sources have told it that UK officials have been putting out feelers and testing the water on the possibility of extending Article 50. Meanwhile, the country can't afford to play Brexit chicken. The former Minister Yvette Cooper writes in The Guardian as she explains why she's leading a cross-party group of MPs in putting forward an amendment to the government's finance bill. It will, Ms. Cooper claims in her article, ensure the government cannot use the bill to implement a no-deal Brexit without first giving Parliament a vote or making an application to extend Article 50. Ahead of the Commons vote on Theresa May's Brexit deal next week, the chairman of the European Research Group, Jacob Rees-Mogg, you may have heard of him before, assesses the PM's chances of success in the Telegraph. He likens the withdrawal agreement to a fairground carousel, which goes round and round and round without ever changing. Mr. Rees-Mogg adds that in the absence of any new solutions for Mrs. May, views have hardened against her proposal, and that no matter how many times it is put to the Commons, the results will be the same. There's universal coverage in the papers of the first court appearance of the man accused of murdering Lee Pomeroy on a train from Guildford to London last Friday. Photographs of the defendant sit alongside reports of how he told Staines Magistrate Court he was paranoid and hearing voices. And the Home Affront is how the Sun headlines an article written by Lord Jim O'Neill, a former Treasury Minister and one of 16 independent commissioners who have spent a year looking at the future of social housing. Their report calls for more than 3 million new social homes by 2040, the paper reports. Meanwhile, according to the Times, a fifth of the army cannot be deployed. It reports that the Freedom of Information request has revealed that more than 7,000 troops are not fit to be sent abroad because of health issues, while nearly 10,000 have limitations on the roles they can carry out in other countries. The Ministry of Defence tells the paper it's had enough personnel for operations. And finally, The Telegraph reports that the Foreign Office, famed for its secretive approach in the past, is now divulging its diplomatic tactics in a free online course. It offers sage nuggets of advice that never forget that you might have a revolution in your country tomorrow. So the person who wants to see you today, who seems very unimportant and perhaps even boring, might become incredibly important tomorrow. So there you go. That's nuggets of information from the Foreign Office. And finally, just looking at the front page of El País on the website, El País in English, looking at the Spanish stories that have been breaking. Centre-right parties clinch deal to end socialist power in Andalusia, but on a joint government by Ciudadanos and Partido Popular depends on the support from the far-right Vox party, which has not been asked to join the negotiations. Have a look at that. And also, Spain has been deporting an average of 30 migrants a day since 2013. Figures shows that Moroccan and Algerians top the list of deportations due to bilateral agreements, while authorities have had a harder time sending back undocumented sub-Saharan Africans. And those are your front pages and headlines for today. 952-78-4000, the phone number, studio at tre.radio, Facebook page, Talk Radio Official, and you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. So, 2 weeks have passed since we last all sat down and talked about the situation in terms of Brexit. And here we are. And if you look across the front pages, you can obviously say, you know, a new year, but absolutely nothing has changed except we are now less than 100 days to go until the UK pulls out of the EU. So with a deep breath, I say it's to be the first one to kick off 2019. Let the sound of silence, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy that. That's the sound of silence. You're unlikely to hear that from any point in the rest of the show.
Absolutely. Okay, I'll kick off. It's always me, so I might as well start being positive. That's what I was accused of before. I was too negative about what would happen to us and all that. So I'll just say, for those people who rang in and said I was negative, I said I'd be positive. I'm now going to be super positive, because they've announced officially, that we can keep our health cover, we can keep our pension rises, which was significant in my point, for the whole of the next 2 years. So people who want to ring in and say I'm being negative and it's all this, as soon as we leave the EU, and that's assuming there's an agreement, because it's the transition period of 2 years, so that we can keep our voting rights, all of that, for a whole 2 years. So they are going to take it away, because if there's no deal, we lose all of that, because, you know, and then it's into reciprocal arrangements and agreements. And I'll still maintain there is no way the Spanish government can tell the British government to give British pensioners a rise in their pension ever. They can't do it, because it's no different to a Canadian or an Australian or anybody else. Yeah, if you've gone from Britain to any of those countries, you don't get an increase in your pension. But you know that when you go. The complication for most of us is that, you know, people like me came here on an understanding of what existed at the time, thinking it would never change. So if there are changes, that's why we need to talk about, which would in industry, it would all be about phased introduction. People who are already here, you know, can maintain their position. People who are coming in the future will have a different set of arrangements. You know, pensions in the UK have changed over the years exactly on those grounds. As for there's nothing happened in the last 2-3 weeks, however long it is since we've not been on air, well, I must watch a different news programme, because lots and lots of things have changed. Nothing has changed on the agreement.
Yeah.
Nothing has changed on the arrangement about whether she is or she isn't going to put it to Parliament. But you're now starting to see 210 MPs, you've talked about the Yvette Cooper thing, but 210 MPs have signed a letter saying no deal. Now, that's significant. 210 cross-party MPs saying that to a government and making it public means that that's some pressure to say no deal. So whatever happens, the government, Theresa May, the cabinet can't decide that Britain are going to just walk away from the EU with no deal. If they do, you know, you have got a big rising of people in Parliament. The complication always with Parliament is, how do you put that into something that sits before Parliament that can make it happen?
Remember, you can get out with no deal by doing nothing, but getting close to the 29th March.
No, that's no deal. Leaving the EU on March the 29th is no deal.
Exactly.
And that means no deal. And what 210, 211 MPs have said, cross-party, we ain't leaving on no deal.
Yeah, but
so it's not walking away.
That leaves 440-something that haven't said that.
No, it doesn't.
That, in a democracy, that seems to be the majority.
No, it doesn't, John. This is like a petition. You know, Sky News have been bandying about...
Because I did this petition, I've got 300,000 signatures on it, to say leave with no deal now. And the government haven't even put it on the amendment yet. 100,000, they're supposed to debate it in Parliament. They haven't. They answered it and said, we're satisfied, we've got a good deal, and that's what we're going to put forward. 300,000 people said that's not right.
That's because you've got a petition based on something that's already happening. Petitions only get heard in Parliament when there are new issues, which is like the Sky thing about MPs or leaders having a leaders thing. And you can just go, hang on a minute, this is Sky Television, who have something like 7 million customers, and they managed to get 135,000 of them to sign an online petition. So they ain't even got to do anything. Just go online and click the button.
Don't forget, the tribunal of the European Union said UK can stay in the European Union if the decision is made before 29th of March. There is, after 29th of March, is out of European Union. Yeah. We don't know the shape of it, which shape we're going to be. Brexit, hard or soft, but by 29th of March, it has to be done. There is no even time for a referendum. There is no even time to an agreement in the Parliament, let alone a referendum, let alone the question of the referendum. So the possibility that it is hard Brexit could not be excluded. And that's the big problem in Spain or in the European Union, because we just don't know what is going to happen. Because it can go all of the way, you know, if there is an agreement with Labour and Tories in the Parliament.
That's all pie in the sky. The issue has never been there for Britain not to leave. Understand that. They signed Article 50 that says Britain will leave. There is no option for the British government to change their mind. And it's the British government that control it, not Parliament, not any party, not the European Union, none of them, the British government. And the leader of the British government is saying quite clearly, we will be leaving the EU on March the 29th. Absolutely, it's 11 summit or other time, 11:29.
11 o'clock at night.
11 o'clock, whatever
is that
it is.
Central European time, or is that a Greenwich Mean Time?
Greenwich Mean Time.
That's difficult, actually.
It's Greenwich Mean Time.
I shall just start drinking in English time and carry on through.
it is Greenwich Mean Time, because the GMT is actually in the document if you ever get round to reading any of it. But, you know, seriously, you can't keep throwing these things in as if they're... There's some reality about it. There is no reality, because the British government are not going to change their position.
Yes, but remember, when you ask for an extension, you might be asking for an extension to the Article 50 that, according to the Tribunal of the European Union, is until 29th of March, 11 o'clock, you might ask an extension for 6 months, for 1 year. I don't know if it's in the agenda or not of the government, but even that extension, as I understand it, it has to be approved by all the member states. Absolutely. And you have certain states that already have seats in the European Parliament that are seats that used to belong to British candidates, you know. So the whole European Union already thinking that Great Britain United Kingdom is leaving, and it's just a matter of how it's going to leave.
That's what I said. You said we could leave, or we could put it off before. There is no way, because there are too many other obstacles for this late in the day for the British government to be able to change its mind. There's no time for a general election. There's no time for another referendum. There's no March the 29th is, you know, and we said 2 years ago, mm-hmm. March the 29th in 2 years' time ain't long enough. Everybody was saying it. 2 years. It's taken 2 years to get to, you know, 3 months away, and they're still saying, oh, we could do this, or we could do... There isn't an option. The option is, and, you know, whether you like them or not...
What was on the form?
No. The option... No, and that's been taken away as well. The option is quite clear. You either vote for the government's plan, or you vote against the government's plan. If you vote for it, that's what we're going to do. If you vote against it, we just walk away with no deal. There is no alternative to no deal. All these politicians, you know, they're gradually, Rees-Mogg, they're all gradually walking away from what they've said. They're all gradually removing themselves because they know they're going to push the government into no deal. And who gets the blame? Well, the MPs who say we ain't having that deal, because they've been warned every day, three times a day for the past 2 months, if you don't vote for my deal, there is no deal. Because the European Union, and mind about what Britain says, the European Union have said, we ain't changing the deal.
Alf, if the Prime Minister called for general election few days or few weeks before 29 without any agreement in the Parliament, it means no deal.
Absolutely. There isn't time for a general election. 9 weeks. No, sorry. I think the minimum you can do it in is 4.5 weeks. So they could do it if they called it now. But in real terms, with the way the British people are, you're looking at maybe nine weeks for a general election. That puts you right on top of March the 29th. It gives you no time to do anything.
And anyway, they're never going to want to have an election. Neither party that is there will want an election. Simple fact is 68.25% of constituencies voted to leave. 85% of MPs are Remain MPs. That means there's 15% MPs that are Leave MPs, which is roughly in line with the people that voted against, or whatever her name is, Thatcher, May, rather.
John, you're back in your old days, yeah, so.
Now, the 117 voted against her, right? There's 120, roughly, Leave MPs in Parliament, so you can reckon that they're probably the same people. And there's 68.25%, and it's pretty equal in areas that where there's a high Leave percentage. They actually come in both areas, Conservative and Labour, and that's a big problem. And they both know that, and they're not going to call an election, because if they do call an election, they are going to have a big surprise. They're not going to want that surprise. They don't want to deal with that surprise. They're hoping that if they can keep their head down and fudge it, and that when we actually go out on a no deal, they can say, well, we tried everything we could, but the people wouldn't support it, but the MPs wouldn't support it, so we're now in a no deal situation. Woolly bully, within 3 months, the EU will be looking to do a deal. It's as simple as that.
Exactly.
Because if it's a no deal situation, they lose 49 billion and they lose their trading.
Juan Carlos.
And as from my Spanish perspective and European perspective, and I am citizen in the world after all, I see that Brexit is, as I already said in one of the previous interventions, programs, the Brexit is not a problem, it's like the fever, there is an illness somewhere, there is something that is causing the Brexit. And what I understand is this: the British population need to find their relation with Europe and their position in the world. This is all about Brexit. The Brexit thesis. And the funny thing is that if you ask me, the situation of Europe, of United Kingdom inside the European Union, it was a situation of privilege. It was really spoiled with all this opting out, this privilege of shores and et cetera, et cetera. And withdrawing from a fantastic position that had been accumulating from the time of the Cold War or even before, pushed all the civil society and the politician to choose between three kind of humiliations now. One, do I stay in the European Union? I said, okay, let's forget about it. Here we stay. Forgive us for these 2 years of mess. This is an humiliation for certain people in the United Kingdom, especially the Conservative Party and all these who have been banned. Those that, okay, soft Brexit, I'm going to stay, but, you know, I'm going to carry on staying with all the benefits. I'm out of the European Union. We call it soft Brexit, where I don't have, at the end of the day, nothing to say. Lithuanian, Spanish, Italian will say something to us. Or hard Brexit, where you see also these lorries in Dover and everywhere, you know, like we have to prepare for the Second World War or the First World War, you know, and, you know, and maybe visas or maybe, you know, any kind. So these three humiliations is the one United Kingdom politicians, especially those who brought the referendum in, have to be facing, and nobody wants to recognize it. What do we do now? It's terrible, terrible situation to choose between three of them. And by the way, none of the three of them will settle the matter. Eh? That even if you do a second referendum, we will not settle the matter. Even you go soft Brexit or hard Brexit, it's a situation where the British society, like all the societies in the world happened before, need to find out the place in the world and the relation with the European Union.
Yeah, absolutely, and in a lot of ways, if we had a populist government at the moment, which unfortunately they don't, I would even recommend that we actually should have stayed in, because with Czech Republic, Slovakia. Austria, Poland, Hungary, all actually coming up with populist governments, with France just about to teeter over, and undoubtedly that will go a populist government, whether it's Le Pen or somebody else, I don't know, with those situations, even with the AfD in Germany, another populist government, you've got a situation where 20% of those 27 are actually populist governments. You've now got a situation where England, in that situation, as a populist government, going in there to reform the EU, could actually bring about those changes, because that bloc would be able to stop all of the federal state anticipation they've got. None of us nobody has a problem with being part of Europe. The problem we have is being part of a federal Europe run by unelected governors, as opposed to that. And that's an objective. What you're seeing here is the clash between populism and globalism. It's as simple as that. And globalism wants to have everybody controlled by them, because we know best. And most people fall into one or two camps. Either you take personal responsibility for your life and you actually want to actually carry on and have objectives. You either recognize yourself as an individual sovereign entity with rights and responsibilities to the people around you, or you actually look at a situation where you say, and in effect, you're saying, I don't really feel I'm capable of running my life, and I want other people to do it for me. I want them to decide what my life should be about. And that's the clash you've got. Globalism has spent 40 years indoctrinating the nanny state into a whole generation or generations of people. That's why the older people went for it, because they weren't in that.
To say that globalization came with Thatcher and Reagan.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and they're conservative. The same conservatives who are now trying to stop globalization.
There is a difference. So everybody makes this problem. There's a problematic difference between people who have globalist ideas of that being a totalitarian society where we control everything and the citizen is a member of the society and the society controls everything, and global trade, which is what Reagan and Thatcher were about, which is where you freely trade with anybody in the world at whatever rates that they will agree with you, right? There's a difference there. The EU is a protectionist organisation. And as a protectionist organisation, what they're going to do, I fully understand, it's what they have to do to protect themselves, because they produce nothing themselves. They do nothing themselves. They are not a sovereign state, and so therefore they have to protect the small status quo that they've got, which is to control 300, 450 million people, have the rules made for 450 million people. Sorry, guys, 65 million of us are deciding we're not going that way.
So what we come back to, as we always come back to, it's the dichotomy of trade versus socialism.
Yep.
And I don't mean socialism in a political term. I mean, you know, what happens to the people is different to what happens to trade. And for those, I really don't understand. You know, Thatcher and Reagan didn't invent globalisation. They had nothing and no part in globalisation, in industrial globalisation. That started long, long before them. And if people don't understand, there are companies who are bigger than most countries in the world, and they are the ones who are creating globalism. It's the Michelins and the Goodyears and the whatever they were in the past who wanted free trade around the world. And part of the setup of being the European Union, forget we're called the European Union, let's call us the EEC. Oh, that's where it started, the European Economic Community, not people's issues, trade. And it was about defending, and you're quite right, John, it was about Europe defending its market from the Americans and the growing Chinese, not even the Russians. Weren't even worried about the Russians, although the Russians bit was about fuel, gas, and stuff like that, you know, services type stuff. That's where Europe started from. It was the EEC. Unfortunately, because I've never voted for them, the Tory party, for years and years and years and years, every time they got into power, they signed a new treaty that was signing off people issues, not trade issues, people issue. We already had a trade agreement. And it's quite simple. You've got to trade, but you've got to have freedom of movement of people because the workforce has to follow the work. That was the argument in Europe. And whether we, you know, oh, we'll have the Norway agreement. Well, Norway signed up. They have no say in what happens in Europe. They pay all the money and they have to agree as part of the trade deal to freedom of movement of people. Even Iceland were trapped in it. I think Greenland may even be trapped in it now. Sweden suffered from it, you know, a few years back because Europe said, we've got all these North Africans who we've got to deal with, migrants. So stop saying, I know, I can see what I'm being told is a caller on the line, and I hope they join in. But do it from a basis of reality. Stop pretending what the world was like. Thatcher and Reagan were just tools of the globalisation. Go and talk to the big companies that were running the world then, when the unions across the world, the International Trade Union Federation, were saying, you've got to stop these companies from being bigger than countries. And part of the European issue was about Europe defending itself from big companies.
But we'll talk it later.
And we've got also presently pointed out, we've got a call. We've got the first caller of 2019 on the line. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, it's Sharon Alicante that gets lambasted, but anyway, I don't mind. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year to you, Sharon.
Yeah, John, get your facts right. It's 39 billion, not 49. And secondly, we have to pay that legally because we're obliged to pay until the end of the EU budget period, which is 7 years, which ends in something like 2021, 20. Right, now, let's look at, I was accused of not knowing the difference between globalisation and globalism. Well, I've been banging on about the globalisers for decades. If you remember, I used to bang on about the bankers. John, what I cannot understand is why you never have anything against the huge tech companies. There was a lady on a business program last night called Cathy O'Neill, who's written a book called Weapons of Mass Destruction. And it talks about how the algorithms, which are all-pervading, now this is a global thing, the internet is a global thing. David Icke said, I reheard his interview over the Christmas period, and he said, if anything's a totalitarian tiptoe, it's the internet, which was initially set up to give people information and exchanges, but is becoming increasingly a surveillance mechanism. And this lady said that how the algorithms are set up, I'm not going off subject because I'll get back to the link in a minute, algorithms are set up to please the people who make the algorithms. So Facebook, they set up their algorithms to keep people on Facebook for as long as possible. This is all pervading. If you, you're going to love this one as well. If you Google idiot under images, Trump comes up. Now, I'm no lover of Trump, but that to me is not fair. It's not right that you Google idiot and Trump comes up, even though I'm not a fan of his. I think last time you gave me a very flippant answer. You said, oh, it's very useful. I use it every day for my business. Do you not see the damage it's doing to the world? And I would also say that regarding globalism, shouldn't you be looking at people like, going back a bit, Dick Cheney and the Rockefellers and the banking system? Nobody seems interested. You blame the EU for everything, for the things that aren't anything to do with the EU or very little. Okay, the central bank, the European Central Bank. They were talking last night about the Fed, how America in every two out of 3 years has been at war, how the new CEO of the World Bank is leaving. We don't know why yet, but he's leaving, and how the Americans dominate the World Bank and the Europeans dominate the IMF. There's so much more to this than you're looking at a very, very tiny part of the totalitarian tiptoe, and I really don't understand why you can't see the bigger picture.
Thank you, Sharon. The totalitarian tiptoe, yeah. I like that already.
I've got to say, I totally agree with you. I mean, I am looking, believe me, at the totalitarian tiptoe. I do look at a much broader thing. And it's very true that our society has that cancer within it, and it is liable to destroy us. I'm more frightened about AI, actually. I saw the other day that Google had a little problem in that the algorithms that were drawing their maps up to speed had found out and designed their own algorithmic shortcuts, which enabled them to be able to produce it faster. So they improved the Google program for mapping, but unfortunately Google didn't know how they improved the Google program for mapping. They couldn't understand it, and even Google were a little bit concerned that their very own algorithms seemed to have a life of their own. So I think that we can be really, really agreement on that, totally 100%. But the problem is at the moment that I've got a stone in my shoe. Now, that doesn't change the fact that you may have a cancer in your body and you've got to deal with the cancer, but you can't actually get to the hospital while your foot's hanging off or something, or you've got a cut. So to me, the whole concept of Brexit, as I said to somebody, as I said earlier today, if we had a different government and it was a populist government right now, with the way that the populist governments are lining up to take control over in the UK, EU eventually, I'd say we should stay in for that, because it would make sense. Because to a changed, reformed UK, EU, taken back to a trading bloc with a common concern for the people, had no problem with the standards of it, and have no problem with the European Union functioning, except for the way that they actually function it and their ultimate plans and objectives. So the totalitarian state, I 100% agree with you. We do have to do something about that. And I'm going to cede over now to Juan Carlos, who wants to say something.
Yes, thank you. Well, first of all, there's two disagreements here from my side. The first, European Union is not a protectionist. As you can call it bureaucratic, you can call it a lack of democracy. I grant you that, especially because European Parliament is far and the way far from the people and from the roots. But you cannot say it's protectionism. Actually, the European Union was growing on the fourth freedom. You know, one of them being the freedom of movement, finance, trade, goods, etc., etc. And in the external relations, they are trying to make agreements less protectionist, you know, with South Africa, with many other countries. So it's not a protectionist organization at all. Actually, it's anti-protectionist if you look at the trend in the world. The second thing is that when I said Margaret Thatcher and said Reagan, the globalization starts with the Portuguese or the Arab or the Ottoman Empire bringing spices all around. In this sense, globalization, obviously, it's far, 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 let's say, backward or whatever. But the globalization came with what Margaret Thatcher and Reagan brought was deregulation, to take the regulations that were doing in the market so the market had the complete freedom. This is what came, and this is what helped globalization, and this created inequalities that needed to be tackled. And a big problem of populism and Brexit and everything is that there are people who suffer this deregulation because the inequalities are so big in their own communities that they said, let's be radical, let's fight against the system. This is the situation now.
And we've got a caller on the line, 952-784-4000. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Andrew from Benidorm.
Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Just a little thought. I live here and I often use Vueling to fly all around Spain. Just a little thought. Vueling and Iberia is owned by British Airways. British Airways is not a Spanish company. If it's no deal Brexit, nobody's going to, the EU have said you can, all planes can fly in and out, but we can't fly in. So there'll be no Spanish internal flights.
No Spanish internal flights because of Vueling in Iberia. I have heard that, yes. Spain is placed, it will have to become a non-EU firm as soon as Brexit happens if it doesn't manage to apply changes to its structure in order to show the EC that its majority shareholders are European.
Yes. So
it's not even owned by British Airways.
That makes a lot of sense anyway. I mean,
it's not even owned by British Airways. British Airways don't own it. British Airways is owned by somebody else.
Yeah, and you know, and get it all back. The national airlines should be owned by the nation that owns them.
Andrew, thanks. thank you for your call in, Andrew.
Thank you. Cheers, guys.
So what's the company that owns British Airways and are they British? This is the problem with when you get multinational companies. And quite rightly, let's not forget, Thatcher and Reagan introduced deregulation and, more important than that, the introduction of competition. And it's competition that undermines your markets. And one, I don't know where you've been, but the European Union, the EEC, was set up as a trade bloc. And it was to defend the market of Europe against unfair trading. And it's never been anything else. What happened is, over the period, you know, people forget Thatcher gets elected and signs off an agreement that brings in lots of social change. And we can't say it anymore. Common agricultural policy, if that's not a defensive mechanism for Europe, I don't know what is. The Common Fisheries Programme was about defending the fishing, never mind about the inter-Europe fishing, it was to defend the UK and the European waters from the Russian trawlers. Yes, if that's not protectionism, I don't know what is. You can't send a Russian trawler into the North Sea at all because they're not allowed because it's part of the EU. That's a defensive mechanism.
There was a time when the Royal Navy used to do that, isn't there?
No. The Royal Navy has protectionism for lots of things, but the seas are protected by the EU. Yeah, we might have wars between Spanish fishermen and French fishermen.
That protection cost us 80% of our stock. I mean, we only get 20% allocation out of our fish.
That's the UK, not Europe. And most of the European... If you buy fish in Spain, where does most of it come from? Oh, off the coast of Nigeria.
Right.
Understand what Europe's about.
952-78-4000 going live to the lines. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning. Happy New Year to you. It's John from Los Feliz.
Good morning, John. Happy New Year to you yourself.
No problem. I hope so. Come back to a couple of funerals, but never mind. Just to say, really, just there's been several changes since we've had this situation. Only going to one small one. And where we all scared about, and we just had this about the airlines, it's quite significant. Either the company's mad or they know it's a little load of bull, that Gatwick Airport, as we know, has been... The majority interest has just been bought 2 weeks ago for $3 billion. And lo and behold, who's bought it? Unless they're totally mad, a French company. So it shows the corporates know what will happen much more so than the politicians do. And I did hear something on LBC this morning where the woman just totally contradicted herself on the the motor industry. But never mind, leave you just with that, that effectively... We've seen major changes, but we've been quite quiet. The major change about the banking, just to go into that very, very quickly, the banking situation where we're going to lose tens of thousands of people, turned out to be total bulls, and very quietly, which we all knew anyway, and the corporations knew, that the clearing of the trillions of derivatives, as we said many, many times last year, the EU isn't capable of doing it. It doesn't have the infrastructure yet. It could take 5-10 years. And now what's happened? They looked at it very politely and said, we're going to give you a year's extension. I think that year's extension of the UK claim, the derivatives are probably going for several years, but I'll leave you with that. There's much more to come, but I don't want to bore you too quickly.
Much more to come. John, good to hear from you. Happy New Year.
TRE, Talk Radio Europe.
Online at tre.radio. Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Yes, we're back. 952-784-1000, studio at tre.radio, the email, the Facebook page, Talk Radio Official, and you can WhatsApp us on +34 645 99 67 95. Joined in the studio by Juan Carlos Galosha, John Harper and Alf Brewer, starting 2019 as we mean to go on. Let's have a look at some of the WhatsApps and emails we've got in from Richard. Regan, wasn't he in the Sweeney? The only reality is that the UK will not leave the EU, Alf. And then he said we've got some voting odds or some betting. UK to leave the EU by the 29th of the 3rd, 2019. Yes, 8-5. No, 8-13. French Europe Minister. No one desires to trap the UK inside the Irish backstop in Brexit deal. When asked about more assurances to Britain on Brexit, cites there's nothing much more we can do. That's the French Europe Minister. He also says, oh dear. The unelected governor's argument. Please explain how the UK's head of state and the House of Lords are elected, please. And also, 65 million did not vote that way. Only 17.4 million chose to leave the EU. If anything, the 48.6 million did not vote to leave. John's laughing on that one. Right then. Also in from Julie, we still have the option to revoke Article 50. Alf? And John, do you read the UK papers other than the Red Tops? Labour wants an election. 952-784-1000, the phone number, studio@tre.radio, the email, Facebook page, Talk Radio Official, and WhatsApping us on +34 645 99 67 95. Just to clear up this thing about, excuse me, just got an email in there, but it's about Rod Stewart tickets. To clear up the situation where Iberia stands, just before Christmas, the AIG Group, an international airline group, it is the parent company of Spanish airlines Iberia and Vueling. Also, it owns British Airways and Aer Lingus. It's legally based in Spain, but controlled by British capital, which means that it's in contact with the Spanish, in talks with the Spanish government and the European Commission to try and ensure that the AIG continues to be considered an EU-based company, such as covered by community rules. According to three government sources and one for the EU, it will be Brussels that will have to ratify the nationality of the group. So that is the situation as it stands at the moment with the owners of Iberia and Vueling in the event of a no deal Brexit. 13 minutes to the top of the hour is the time. Panny, we'll come back on any of the points that we were making before the break.
Yep, and if you recall, if people recall about the airline industry, when America were going to start to do their stuff, lo and behold, it was British Airways at the time, before AIG was formed, and British Airways were in negotiations with a number of airlines to create a thing called One World. This is all about business, not governments. This is all about businesses finding ways around it. We had Grumpy Man on here before, who ran an industry in the UK. You know, he had a video industry. Very good. And I asked him quite sincerely, so what did you do, John, when they changed the law in the UK, some of the employment laws or whatever? What did you... Well, his answer was quite sincere. We find ways around the law. And that's what's going to always happen. The companies, doesn't matter what the EU says, doesn't matter what America says, they will always attempt to find ways and methods around the law. And I'll repeat, for the sake of being absolutely boring, which I know I can be.
No.
Seriously, people, they don't listen. Someone just said we still have time to revoke Article 50. I never said we didn't have time to revoke Article 50. What I said was, is the British government. Understand, it's the British government. It's Theresa May and the cabinet, in effect, not even Parliament.
And the civil service.
No, the civil service don't have a vote. And I object to it. This is the European Union stuff as well. Oh, the European, these unelected people. There's a whole parliament in Europe that has a say. The fact that, you know, government ministers go along and have ministerial meetings, all the rest of it, they're elected people who go there and have votes, and they use their votes. The commissioners do what they're told to do, the same as the civil service, do what they're told to do by the government.
Whoa.
No, they can have a major influence. No, John, you can be as cynical as you want.
An MEP cannot put forward legislation. He can only approve what they give to them.
Excuse me, an MEP has a say. And I'll tell you what's even worse than that, that you people always forget, is that every single country in the EU has the right of veto. That's the issue that one said earlier, that at any stage, Britain can say we want to revoke Article 50, and 27 other countries can say we're not going to let you. One country can say we're not going to let you. So don't keep hiding behind these unelected people. There are plenty. When Thatcher went and signed the agreements, she went on behalf of Britain and she signed the agreements. Not some unelected politician, well, not politicians, some...
How would you like to go into one of your famous union negotiations knowing that you could only agree things that I put to you? You couldn't agree anything of yourself. You couldn't change anything. You could only agree or disagree with what I told you.
You've never been involved in a set of negotiations between a trade union and a company, ever.
Thank God for
that. Well, I'll tell you why. Because exactly what you've said is what happens. The company says, this is what's on offer. They don't come and say to us, what would you like? They say, this is what's on offer. And we have a choice. We don't want what's on offer. I took out 110,000 telecom engineers on strike. We were on strike for 6 weeks because the government wouldn't give in. Never again. I would never take anybody out on strike for, not even for one day, because you don't understand what's happening to all those people. I had 50,000 people who wanted to stay out on strike forever. We had 60,000 people who wanted to go back to work the next day. We had 20,000 people who left the union. Come on, be fair about this. Don't keep saying these bland statements. What would you do if you was... I was always confronted by industry that said, this is what's on offer. Nobody ever come to us and said, what would you really like? We'll give it to you. Never.
952-78-4000. Good morning, Cool. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Felix here.
Good morning, Felix.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
And to you, sir.
I do not think it's going to be a happy year. However... if I can just get a word in edgeways into this discussion.
Well, you and me both, Felix, I can assure you.
Okay. If I would agree with John there that basically I think what he's saying is that no deal.
Felix? Hello? We seem to have lost Felix there. If you can try and come back to us, we'll try and get you. We've got another caller on the line, 952-78-4000. Good morning, caller. I'm on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Is that me?
It is indeed you,
right,
yes.
Kate. I want to say Happy New Year to
Happy
all
New
the panel,
Kate.
And particularly warm Happy New Year to Alf, because recently we've fallen out a bit occasionally, but it was an absolute pleasure to hear him defending rightly, absolutely rightly, the difference between the, you know, the people who have the power to vote and the people who work as civil servants. And there is a staggering difference that most people slurp over and ignore. Britain has got not a great deal to be proud of as far as democracy is concerned, with the unelected head of state, the unelected senior house, the first past the post, which has distorted results in Britain for very, very many years, and indeed is one of the reasons for the mess over Brexit. So, congratulations on exactly what you've been saying for the last 10 minutes, Alf. Cheers.
There you go. Thank you very much for that. Call.
Thank you, Kate. And we never fall out. We just disagree occasionally.
Yes,
he's very happy for his coming.
He's very happy. He's been a little smile on his face.
Yeah, glowing. He's absolutely glowing.
Cheers.
Thanks very much. 952-78-4000 is the phone number.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Live and lively from TRE Talk Radio at Pure Voice in Spain. We go live to the lines. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Oh, it's John from Los Angeles again.
Yes, John.
Just to say, the very democracy of the EU is its Achilles heel. It's ridiculous that, and this is why it takes legislation so long, that you can have one out of 27 object and it's pulled down. I mean, it's got to become more majority-based. Because we had that situation, a little Belgium protector effectively stopped things. Anybody can stop it. It's quite ludicrous. It's almost, if you can say it's like this, it's like 27 economists in a room all trying to agree. It's not going to happen. The EU has got to go back to, has got to change somewhat. I know it's part of majority voting, but I think everything should go to majority voting and not to this 100%, because anybody can stop it. And just a quick word for Alf. Alf, remember your New Year's resolution, the same as mine. We're going to stick to bullet points and not waffle. And unfortunately, I think both of us will fail before the end of the program, but never mind.
Thanks very much for the call in there.
Okay, John. It's called You Want a European Army, because if you ever give majority voting, that's the first thing that the European Union are going to do. Amen. We're going to have a European army, and then you'll go,
yes.
And who runs them?
Okay, I just allow me to say, you know this famous proverb, don't throw the baby with the dirty water, because the European Union, even it's not the summon of democracy, even if there is a level of complexity and there is technocrats and bureaucrats and whatever, and there is a room for improvement, it means peace in Europe. Remember the First World War, the Second World War, all the wars we had before among us. Whatever we do, whatever we agree, whatever little it is, you know, it means peace. It means France and Germany are not fighting anymore, with all the consequences. Don't forget that behind all this project, it is a huge amount of peace from 1945.
Greece at the moment.
We're going to go live to the going live to the lives.
And also, let's not forget, that wasn't what the EEC was set up to do.
Going live to the lines. There you go. We've got a caller on the line, Alf. Yes, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where you're calling from? What's your viewpoint? Oh, come on, I heard.
Right. I found myself talking to myself. I seem to have been cut off.
Yeah, Felix, you're cut off. Right. I don't know what happened there. My apologies.
Did I get to the point the Iberian Lynx?
No, you didn't. You absolutely didn't, Felix.
Okay, the man, I'll be very short here. The man there said, we have had peace in Europe. Sorry, no peace for the Iberian Lynx. There is no space in Spain left for the Iberian Lynx. Why is that? Because capitalist, greedy agriculture of the EU has left no space for the Iberian Lynx. I went on to talk also about the Irish hare, same thing, but I don't want to go into that. I actually find myself talking to myself and saying goodbye at the end, so this is not a good system. Thanks, John.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
Very much indeed, and thanks for that. Always a variety of viewpoints here on TRE Talk Radio, your voice in Spain. 952-784-4000 is the phone number. studio@tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official, and you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. Alf.
And the EEC was not created. One of the outcomes is that, yeah, well, one of the issues and one of the biggest talking points was about peace in Europe. You're quite right, one. But the EEC was just about a trade bloc. It was nothing more, nothing less, and it was about coming together. Following the EEC, and in the years after, there were lots of conversations about how Europe would progress to the future. And one of those issues was about a federal Europe. The difficulty is that the commissioners that they kept employing, not the commissioners that were employed, sorry, the civil servants who they kept employing, and when they get to the top guys were all federalists. Everybody below them weren't. And we had this, and we have, John's quite right, we have this constant argument in Europe about whether we want to be federal or not federal. The only people that I know of who have ever discussed federalism are these unelected commissioners.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. Alf, on the beginning, the beginning of the European Union was not the European Union, but the Community of the Steel. After the World War, Germany started to have the right to have their own steel business, and France their own steel business.
We're going to run out of time before that. We'll be back to the second half of Viewpoint after the international national news.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Back with the first viewpoint of 2019. Always lively, always live, picking up where we left off. 952-784-4000 is the phone number. studio@tre.radio is the email. Facebook page, if you wish to leave a post, is Talk Radio Europe Official. And you can WhatsApp us on +34 645 99 67 95. Joined in the studio today by Juan Carlos Galasha, John Harper and Alf Brewer. But go straight to the lines. 952-784-4000. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Johnny Bullet Points. Just to say, I always have to laugh, and I'm no apologist for Putin. I can't stand the guy. But we all seem to forget that they talk about no war. I think it's despite the EU. The EU was a catalyst for sparking off the Ukraine situation, although Russia's taken fully advantage of it. But it was the UK, the EU, with Ashton, our lady, offering tens of billions for them to get closer, whereas we always thought the Ukraine should have been the bridgehead between the West and the East. Instead, we approached them with billions upon billions. So I think it's despite the EU that we haven't had world war. We haven't had world war, but we haven't had a war of some sort. And we probably are going to get a war of some sort financially, which we haven't commented on, as we've seen while we've been away. The markets have had a very orderly, what some would call a crash. But when that comes, we've had problems over the immigration situation. If we get a financial problem, Italy with 2.4 trillion of debt, how are we going to get out of that one? Will we become United Union, European Union? I don't think so. I think where there's money involved, where there's immigrants involved, we had this United Union. I think when money's involved, and the only one country that has it is Germany, we can have another this United Union. It could be the catalyst for change, which could come quite good. We go back to being a trading organisation, but I'll leave those bullet points, unless there weren't bullet points.
Thank you very much for your call in there. 952-784-4000. We'll go left to right this time, starting with Juan Carlos. John, hang on there.
Basically, the Ukrainian society was deeply divided, so I think it was the European Union impact on that was limited. It was already the seed of conflict there. What I understand is that if there is a community of countries who have been very diverse and there is a trade and there is working forces coming from one part to another, this community of interest it prevents from war. It helps peace. Nobody wants to go to war to a country which actually you are is buying your products, or you are, or Western Union is sending you money because the immigrants are already there. So there is a link between European Union and peace in Europe, and it is proof the level of country among the conflict among those inside the European Union have been kept very low, and certainly not to the point of war. I mean, this is completely proven.
Yeah, I would just actually say to the last 150 years, I think the countries that have started wars in Europe have been Germany and France. What they're saying is that if you actually let us control everything, we won't start a war for you. And then you've got Merkel coming on the other day saying Germany's going to have a much more prominent role in the future. Oh, that kind of makes me nervous when Germans say we're going to have a prominent role in the future of Europe. Because it kind of, it just doesn't sound right somehow.
And we're going to go live to the lines. Good morning, 952-784-4000. Good morning, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, yeah, it's Sharon again.
Yes, Sharon.
Hello, Sharon. Okay, John, you don't know much about the Germans. I've got lots of German friends. So I speak some of the language. There's no way they want to rise up in power again. It's ridiculous. And I have to say, I got very annoyed with John. Nobody's been better at dividing and ruling than the UK over the years. You're just looking at your Eurocentric conversation we're having today, but you look at the rest of the world. We've colonised, divided and ruled. Look at India and Pakistan, to the detriment of hundreds of millions of poorer people. So, come on, you know, let's be honest with this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call in there. 952-784-4000. Just going to the emails, etc. From Victor. A man phoned in a short while ago. I was in the car and effectively said, he said, ignore the politicians as they know nothing. When did they ever know anything? Watch the markets and the actions of the corporates. Yes, I know the pound has fallen since day one, but despite the current arguments, the pound is holding up well, very much to my surprise. That is from Victor. Thank you for your call in. I got for your email. Another call in. Good morning, live. Caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Kate Costa-Blanca.
Morning, Kate.
just a quickie to Sharon. There may have been a policy of divide and rule. I've yet to see clear evidence of that. There's lots of practice over 100,000 years, you know. But the issue of India and Pakistan is exclusively caused by the Muslim minority in India. Gandhi was very, very much against the separation of the... he wanted a totally non-religious state of India with both Muslims and Pakistanis living together. Both Muslims and Hindus living together happily. So it wasn't the British Empire was not responsible for all the division and rule that happened. Okay.
Thank you very much for the call in there. And just a quick WhatsApp +34 645 99 67 95. Lest we forget, Britain actually left a free trade area EFTA. Remember that EFTA to join the EEC. So free trade can hardly have been the only motivation. And also, what exactly is the issue of an EU army, Alf?
What the issue of a European army is, because that's what Merkel and some of the others were suggesting that Europe should consider, especially since Crimea. It's been on the cards for a long, long time. In fact, we were talking about TTIP and junk like that. We were talking about 4 years ago. So it's an issue that's been bubbling around. It's a bit like this federalism of Europe. It's an issue that bubbles around that never really seems to get anywhere. But believe you me, when these commissioners and whatever get something in their head and they want to promote it, they start talking about it. Merkel was on October, and she was said again about a European army. And all of it, you know, this is where John says, oh, I'm frightened when they say Germany's going to be more prominent. I think she was talking about industrially rather than anything else. And they've got to be for Europe. Europe won't exist unless Germany's doing well.
I think Germany's learned after the last couple of bouts that actually using the armed forces doesn't totally work in today's society. Their approach now is to take it over industrially. They've got the strongest nation. They've destroyed the currency of Greece. They've destroyed the currency of Italy. They are actually destroying countries in a different way nowadays. Absolutely. But they just as much control Greece now. They just as much control Italy now. And they're both kicking against it. They want to control Poland. They want to control... Oh, Poland. They want to control all these things.
As Sharon keeps saying, John,
skin the cat by a different name.
Anti-European stuff and just... What is it called? Crimea, we're going on about it today. Crimea, Battle of Sebastopol.
Yeah, we were battling over it. It's a key point
against the Russians, not against anybody else. Absolutely. It wasn't against the Turks.
But Crimea and Ukraine is a key point in Europe.
So somebody draws a line. Yeah, one and I were having a conversation off air about it. Someone draws a line like they did in Africa. Yeah, and I will say, the Kurds are the biggest North African population. There isn't a country called Kurdistan or Kurdish or whatever.
Right.
They're the biggest, because some Europeans, French, German, British...
Turkish.
No, French, British, Germans drew the lines, not the Turkish. The British drew the lines, and the Spanish got a bit involved when it was the countries opposite Spain, and they drew the lines across Africa based on whatever they felt like, you know, whatever it was industrially that suited them. So the Kurds were left out because they didn't want the biggest group of people to run North Africa. Simple as that. And it goes on. And someone said about, you know, Pakistan. And I go, hang on a minute. That was an issue. That was a religious issue. But then what happened about Bangladesh? What happened about Kashmir? What happened? These things are not, they're never simply one-off things. The issue about the Ukraine and why the EU are important in that is because it actually pulled back from setting off a war. Everybody was frightened that there would be a war created because of what was happening in the Ukraine.
And we've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Thank you for holding. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles. Campbell here.
Good morning, Campbell. Happy New Year.
Good morning. Happy New Year, to you and to everybody. To do with the European Army, I was involved with a property company in Brussels. And we had a lease of a property in
big building in the centre of Brussels, and we were paid €150,000 to abandon that lease so that it could be taken over by the EU for the European Army, and that was in 2001.
Right, so that's the... So that the
and the question is...
So it's been thought for a whole lot longer.
Absolutely, but and the question is, who runs them? You see, we have NATO, and no one country runs NATO.
But Alf, let's be clear. I'll leave you to it.
Thank you, Campbell.
Thank you, Campbell.
Let's be clear. The European Union Army came exactly at the point when Donald Trump was saying we don't want to support NATO anymore as it is.
No, he didn't.
Because he said, now I want you to pitch in.
Donald Trump said he didn't want to keep paying everything to NATO.
Exactly.
He wanted the Germans and the French to actually pay their share.
European Army was 15 years ago.
Right. Okay, order. I got my speaker's hat on. Right. Let's Juan Carlos.
Thatcher used the UK veto for a conversation and a debate in the European Parliament to stop them talking about the European Army. So it's not a recent thing.
Allow me just a second. First, there is a contradiction about what John says. Said Germany is running the show and and on the other side, as you said a few minutes before, how can you manage a region where everybody has the right of veto and stop everything? No, so Germany has certain power. The big country has right of veto. There is a good balance. I think European Union have to go deeper into what is financial policy. What is not possible is that in Ireland or Luxembourg you pay so little, or in Malta you pay so little taxes, and then in France so much. This I agree. Or even a common social policy that makes people feel that belong to the European Union, whatever the wealth of the country. Regarding European Army, it's clear that what Trump wanted is that everybody puts money, but NATO, in essence, is controlled by the United States. And United States is the main actor in NATO. What many countries doesn't want to put is money, basically for United States to deal with their own foreign policy and for foreign agenda. So that came to the European Army in.
We get a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, it's Peter from Cordoba. Quickly, just to go back to one of your guys saying about Germany and France starting all the wars and Germany getting control of the EU and how bad that would be and the scaremongering that goes on there. I mean, let's just quickly look back at British history. British history is that we've subjugated more people than Germany, possibly even more than France. So, I mean, talk about globalisation and talk about problems. Britain was there first. We messed it up, and at the moment we're still suffering some of the consequences of it. So don't be frightened of Germany. Stop using those old scaremongering techniques and get on with saving the EU and the UK within it.
Okay, there's one basic difference between historically with the old colonial, the East India Company as it started out, and the colonial empire. All of those people actually still want to trade with us. They actually quite like us. The Commonwealth like us, even though we'd abandoned them 40 years ago and said, you're on your own because we're going with the EU. They actually quite like us. They represent a large proportion of the world. They do recognise, I've been in quite a few colonial situations, and I've always taken a point of questioning the locals, the indigenous people, as to what they view colonialism by. And overall, they agree with me that colonialism in concept is a terribly bad idea. But in reality, what most of them got out of it, which they didn't have before, was a legal system, an education system, a health system, and unfortunately a religious system. So they actually got some benefits out of it. I had a guy down in Malaysia say to me, the best thing that you did is the first thing you did when you took us over was you mapped every bit of land, a bit like Doomsday Book, so that you could actually collect the taxes. But when you left, we actually knew where all the boundaries were because you'd done a land registry, and therefore we saved ourselves from a revolution of people saying that's my land or was my land. You'd mapped it all out. So colonialism has its down points, but it's also got its up points, and they still do want to trade with us, and they still want to come and work in our hospitals, and they still want to come and work in our country.
952-78-4000, going live to the lines. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Steve from Cordoba.
Steve, good morning to you.
I'd like to wish everybody the best for 2019. Hello, Alf, mate. Glad you're on, son. You're educating us as usual. I'm a bit concerned about John Harper.
Well, we all are, to be honest with you there.
Even I'm concerned about him.
Because he's spreading the myth about Britain, well, for whatever reason, he has his reasons. He's basically saying that that we're not supported correctly, and we don't have the right control. We're not looked after in the EU. The anonymous men from Mars are running it, and we have no decisions. My main concern with the whole thing now is going to be what happens after. I've not seen any form of Plan B, and like one of those terrible Christmas get-togethers, the family is now completely at odds with each other, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens after the aftermath and a decision is taken. Radio 4 had a programme on a couple of days ago, and they were talking about many countries in the EU, Germany, France, Belgium, people from those countries complaining that they couldn't understand what decisions were being made in England. And even at Christmas, I spent Christmas in Spain this year with a Spanish family, and they asked me why Britain were taking such a silly decision to leave. Because, as you know, I am a person that believes in remaining, but I do see the benefit of leaving if there's a plan. Now, Alf, please, could you give me some reason why no one talks about a Plan B, why they would have a company come in to run the boats so lorries could pass over, and they have no experience, and why May seems to think that driving down a road with a blindfold round her eyes as she's heading over the cliff is the way to run a country, and who's going to bring everybody together after decisions made? Because it really, really, really irritates me, and I'd like to have the views of the panel, and I'll leave and listen to the radio now.
Happy and happy New Year to you as well. Thanks for calling in there. 9527 84000. Alf, let's go with you first off.
Okay, let's the direct answer to the bit about Plan B is that makes a wild assumption that there's a Plan A. and I don't think there is. I don't think there's any planning about anything that's gone on other than Theresa May has come back from discussions in Europe. Remember, she's taken over the negotiations. This isn't some, whatever you call them, you know, the civil servants or some unelected person. You know, they might be there advising, but she's the direct negotiator. So all these, you know, the Brexit secretary hasn't even attended any of the discussions. Says a lot for where she's coming from. And if you're convinced and committed as an individual that this is the right way to go, then you ain't going to have a Plan B, because that makes a wild assumption that you actually think your plan might not work. So you have to be committed to what you're doing. And that's all she's doing. She's driving through. You know, John keeps trying to tell me how to negotiate with these senior managers. When you go in as a negotiator, you do have an idea. Very rarely does your plan last more than 5 minutes because you haven't heard what the other side are going to say. But you've always got a commitment to what you're doing. If you go to a workforce and 95% of the workforce say, you go and tell the governor that they're wrong and we're going to go on strike if they don't change, then you go in, even though you've told the workforce that the governor's going to laugh at you, you go in there and you do that. And then the governor says, yeah, we've heard what you said, but we ain't changing our mind. Now go back and tell your workforce that. It's as simple as that. So that's all Thatcher is facing. Change it to a different thing. Thatcher, May. I'm sitting next to John too much. May goes in there. She says, here's the deal. The European Union say, yes, that's the deal. She comes back and a bunch of people, the members, sitting in Parliament say, we don't like that deal. And she says, but they ain't going to change their mind. But I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll go back and meet him again. So she goes back in there and she meets him. She comes back and she says, no deal. This is the deal. It's not a no deal. This is the only deal. And the EU come out and say, and this is the deal. And we're not changing. So now the workforce have got a decision to make. Do you want to go on strike? In the case of Brexit, it's called, do you want to do more harm to yourself than you're already doing? And that's the decision that Parliament's got to make. Doing what we're doing is damaging the British economy. If we go in there with no deal, everybody, all the forecasts are it will damage us even more. So you've got a choice. So the British Parliament, not the people. Oh, we're going to have a people's vote. What are you going to put to the people's vote? Do you want to damage yourself or do you want to damage yourself more? And the British people ain't going to say, we don't want any of it. They're going to go, we ain't got a clue, like they didn't have the last one. They didn't have a clue.
The plan A, I will tell you what was the plan A. The plan A was, let's make a referendum of the Brexit, let's make the Conservative, the Tory party quiet after winning the referendum, I mean, meaning winning that they are not going to be in Brexit. That was the plan A. The plan B came, B, C, D, all the question is that it didn't work because the idea it was, let's make Brexit, let's make a referendum to win it. I mean, basically that the citizens of the United Kingdom will vote against getting out of the European Union. The Conservative Party will be quiet for at least 10, 20 years. That was the whole idea. It didn't work. Yes. You know how it was.
I'm really sorry about that. I mean, it's just like that 17.4 million people just decided that they didn't want to actually buy the government's propaganda. I see this two things. Either Remainer May has trying the very best she can to keep the EUK under EU control so that she can actually keep that status quo. And I don't know what they've got on her, but I know they've got lots of things on most people. So either that's the situation, or we're being terribly blackadderish here. And there's a cunning plan. And the cunning plan may just be that she can put her hands up at the end of the day and say, well, we tried our best, but the EU wouldn't accept the deal. Once the UK leaves on no deal and we're on WTO rules, the EU will come forward with a deal.
That's your idea, John. But what won't change, because the EU can't let it change, understand the rules of the European Trading Organisation. If you want to trade with us, you have freedom of movement of people. Stop all the other nonsense. So WTO rules come in and Europe are going to come and say, oh, let's have a deal. No, they'll say, yeah, we'll have a deal, but we want freedom of movement of people. And the UK are going to go, no, that's why we want it out of Europe.
Yes, I completely agree with you in this sense. But there is hidden between any referendum, not only Brexit, any referendum in the world, you give the opportunity to people who are unhappy to vote against the system. It's not the first referendum that was lost. And this is rooted in the inequalities. In my opinion, the inequality that came with neoliberalism. You know, when the people are poor, I vote for whatever. That's like extreme right or extreme left. I don't care. I want something who destroys it because I don't have enough to sustain myself and my family. So the Brexit was an excellent opportunity for this. Excellent. And it happened even in Ireland when they needed to ratify the European Union agreements. It comes to other... Today you say in Malaga province, and you tell them, you know that you are paying taxes for all the provinces in Andalusia like Jaén who are poorer than you, and you can have a critical mass of people saying, yes, why is it, you know, I mean, it's very easy to confront realities in the world. What, from my point of view, this goes with anti-system plus those who feel that United Kingdom is much more powerful in the world than it is. This is my opinion. This is from a European side. History put countries in their own size. For example, in Spain, we understand that European Union is the best for us, even though we have a lot of critics about it, you know, bureaucracy, and they don't listen, and whatever, and oranges now, we cannot sell the oranges because they have a trade deal with South Africa, etc., etc. But we still think that it's better to be in this club than out, you know, and this comes because our conscience of our side in the world is not the same that we had 100 years ago. Since you had an empire so close in time, you are, your view of life, of Commonwealth is still there. The Queen it was the Queen Emperor of India, for God's sake. So your unconscious collective is different than ours. We lost the empire in 1898 if with an American war. And another from European Union side, this is from our European Union side, we see, sorry what I'm going to say, we see a bit spoiled United Kingdom. Because when Margaret Thatcher came, I want my money back, they give you the check. I won't opt out from, immigration policy. You got it. I don't want to be part of visa, of Schengen. You got it. I want to have borders between you and me. Physical borders. Then there is a freedom of movement. But you have physical borders. You need to show a passport when you enter. I don't need to show my passport when I enter to France. So you got a huge history of eating the cake and having the cake. Absolutely. And all of a sudden, somebody say, you know what? You cannot anymore eat the cake. And why not? Eat the cake and have the cake. Hey, wait a moment. Why cannot? I have been for 1945, you know. I mean, member of the Security Council. Why cannot eat the cake and have the cake?
We turned around and said, we don't want your cake. So, I mean, you know, do what you want with your cake. The UK have decided they don't want your cake.
Because the cake is trade. Never forget it, John. It's not about people. This is about
But it's a self-harm. If you don't
like it, no, actually, no. You're getting it wrong there. This is about people.
No, this is about trade.
No, this is about people for the people. They actually don't understand trade.
No, this is about trade.
They don't understand the trade.
If we don't have the trade, the people get less money.
Yeah.
You know, people understand not having money in their pocket.
Okay.
It's trade.
Yeah, but you're
Stop
going to...
changing it onto but some other issue.
It is
this
about
is about a trade deal between
the
UK
it's about
the
fact
and Europe.
That if the it people wasn't, John, have got fed up with people manipulating
if
them.
If it wasn't, why is it that the parliamentary people are saying we can't leave Europe on no deal? Because it makes no difference
because
to the people.
85% of them are Remainers.
No, because it doesn't make any difference to the people. The people are the people. The people rely on British trade. Our biggest trading country or organisation is the European Union.
But that's 15% of our trade, sorry, Alf.
Well,
85% of our trade is to the rest of the world.
Yes, but it's still our biggest trading partner.
Yeah, well, do you think they're going to stop wanting to buy our stuff if they do
that? No, I didn't say that. I tell you what, John, they are moving stuff out fairly rapidly, aren't they? And some of these organisations are gearing themselves up. Who's it just moved to Southern Ireland? There's a company just moved to Southern Ireland so they can still remain inside the EU. They're moving across the border, Belfast to Dublin or whatever. But they're moving out of the UK into Southern Ireland. Don't pretend this stuff isn't happening. And you also keep on saying we've got a rise in all these populist parties. Mm-hmm. And I go, OK, tell me one country... One country in the world, one country in Europe mainly, tell me one country that's got a populist party in power.
Italy.
None of them.
Hungary.
No, none of them. They haven't.
Hungary's in power.
Populist parties are the government. They're populist because they get elected. What you're talking about are oppositionists who set up. You're talking about Vox. You're talking about UKIP. You're talking about Podemos. You're talking about all these other hodgepodge of people that are coming along, mainly, and I won't say solely, but mainly right-wing organisations who are preying on people about immigration, we all know is about racism. Nothing more.
Nothing about racism. Oh,
it's all about racism.
It's nothing about racism.
It's all about racism.
It's about tribalism, I'll accept. Racism, no.
Okay, I'll take you down to Fuengirola Seafront and we'll meet a bunch of proper Spanish national people.
Right.
And you tell me they don't dislike the British.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Right, that's racism.
Well, that's their problem.
That's race. No, it's not their problem. That's all of our problem because we're still trying to live together in an organisation that's a bit more harmonious. So
populist parties play on
the fears of people. They don't play on the reality of life.
I live in Spain. I love Spain. I've lived here probably longer than most of the Spaniards that I meet, right? I actually chose to live here. I don't choose to try and change their way. I will not be going to the anti-bullfighting protest because bullfighting is a part of Spanish culture and it's nothing to do with me as a Giri to actually try and change that. I don't like bullfighting, but I'm not going to try and make Spain not have bullfighting when it's been in their culture for years. I would never vote in, even though I'm
animal welfare.
I'm entitled to vote in.
Nicked all the land for the lynx.
I'm invited. I am able to vote in Spanish elections. I would not vote in Spanish elections because it's not my country. I'm a guest here and I respect it as a guest. What the actual whole thing about in England was about the fact that they want a situation not where foreigners aren't allowed in because we've absorbed foreigners from you and me. We're way generations back. I am born English. I am born in England. I have a British passport, but my ancestry is Irish and Scandinavian or Anglo-Saxon. I am no more an English than the Celts may have the right to be English. I don't have the right to call myself anything. I am English because I was born there and my family have been there for a few hundred years. And we absorb
Oxford
that.
Oxford study that says that most of the British are descendants from the Spanish fishermen from the north?
No, that's
I can send you the link.
Right then, anyway.
While we're... Well, I'll tell you what, John, you're not even proper Scandinavian because I'm a Viking and you're not.
Right then, meanwhile, little Norse gods here, we've got a call on the line. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Kate Costabanca.
Yes, please.
One, I think Alf is wrong on it is racist to dislike people of a different culture because some of the culture that was being implicitly referred to was drunken yobbish behaviour that no one British is proud of. Secondly, the whole issue about immigration is a massive great distortion. The vast version way of describing it is people believed that the number of immigrants in the country and the most easily identifiable ones were those looking most least like English. I mean, not pasty cut of faces, for example, we're holding down wages. Now, there isn't actually that evidence. There is certainly evidence that the wages were being held down, but it wasn't the fact of the immigration per se. It was the way that the fat cats package size of the total income base was very much higher and increasingly higher than those of normal people. So basically the immigration issue is so muddied that it's not really worth it, except it's a very, very powerful, it has been a very, very powerful calling stand in a half-baked discussion.
Thanks for the call in, 952-78-4000. Quick email in there saying, no, Alf, disliking Brits is not racism. Xenophobic at a push, but not racist. And also, does Canada not have a better deal with the EU than we would have with a no deal? Those are the comments in, 952-78-4000, the phone number, studio@tre.radio, the email, Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official, and you can WhatsApp us on +34 645 996795. Moving away from the European Union, etc., etc., and we'll be dealing with a lighter issue, Trump's wall, after the break.
Talk Radio Europe.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
It's like we were never away, isn't it? 952-78-4000 is the phone that you've missed us. 952-78-4000, the phone number, studio@tre.radio is the email, the Facebook page, Talk Radio Official, and you can WhatsApp us on +34 645 996795. Joined in the studio by John Harper, Alf Brewer, and Juan Carlos Gaiocha. Let's move away. Sorry, something just flashed across my radar saying, can a Leona Lewis story really help you sleep at night? Well, it made me laugh anyway. Let's move away from the issue of Brexit to what's been happening across the pond. US President Donald Trump is set to argue that an immigration crisis requires his long-promised wall along the Mexican border. Mr. Trump will make his case in his first speech from the Oval Office on Wednesday ahead of a trip to the border on Thursday. A partial government shutdown has been in effect for 17 days after lawmakers failed to break a budget impasse. The president is insisting that $5 billion be included for the border wall, a decision by a major US TV network to set aside at least 8 minutes of airtime for the speech, has sparked controversy and fueled debate on social media. Critics point out that the networks aired President George W. Bush's primetime address on immigration in 2006, but did not air one by President Barack Obama in 2014. Democratic leaders in the House and Senate released a joint statement saying the speech would be misleading and demanding airtime to counter Mr. Trump's arguments. Now that the television networks have decided to air the president's address, which, if his past statements are any indication, will be full of malice and misinformation, Democrats must immediately be given equal airtime. Mr. Trump has deployed around 5,800 troops to the border and described migrants as an invasion.
So where are we? What are our thoughts on the Trump? Let's start with Juan Carlos.
First of all, immigrations, you know, it's incredible because we're in a time where there is a lot of information, a lot of newspapers, you know, Facebook, but there is some lie somewhere that basically say that leftist or socialist or want an open door for immigrations. This is not true. Everybody wants immigration to be regulated. Everybody wants it. And I guess the Labour Party is exactly the same in United Kingdom. That where it comes, how we tackle it. Immigrants are coming anyways because things we are working in a world where the law is offer and demand. If your goods are better than mine and at a better price, I'm going to buy your goods. But maybe I'm also going to your country to work to make those goods, because in my country where I cannot make those goods, I don't have anything. So how do we make a better world, you know, for everyone? That's the fantastic, the billion-dollar question. For me, it seems absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it's obvious that Trump has a big issue, you know, or the advisors are not particularly good. You will not stop Mexico by putting a wall in Mexico, the immigration. We know it in Spain. We know it in most of Europe, because you can go up. You can dig in, you can go on the left, on the right, and cross it there. There will be your network. Like, it's exactly like narcotics. You cannot stop narcotics by putting more and more policemen. The only thing is that the price of the narcotic will increase in your own country. So there must be something else to be done, and this is what we have to all agree.
John.
Okay, does anybody here lock their car door? Do you lock your car up?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you lock your front door?
Automatically, yeah.
Do you lock your front door?
Yes,
of course, you do.
Of course we do.
Okay, why?
To stop people like you getting in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You see, you just hit the nail on the head. Going back to my 14-year-old burglarizing days, I can tell you I always look for people that left doors open, bikes in their front garden, didn't lock their cars because they were easy targets. And the fact is, that as soon as you actually lock your door, you are saying, I have something of property of my own personal property that I reserve for myself, and I do not give you authority to take. And once you do that, you've immediately approved a border wall. Because the fact is, if you're a country, you need to have a lock. That people come up to your door and they say, I would like to come in. And you say, okay, what do you have to offer? Yes, we like you, or yes, we recognise that you're in a very bad situation, you are a refugee, you are in danger in your own country, we will give you protection, we invite you in. As soon as you actually have somebody comes to break down your door, they are trying to steal your stuff, because you haven't given them authority to come into your house and steal your stuff. So the issue that is at debate here with Trump is he's establishing the principle, and the principle is we can absorb hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions of people, into the United States, but they have to be people who've asked to come here, who've followed our rules, who've obeyed the law, and are therefore going to be a useful citizen, we hope, within our situation. But we will also take people who have no alternative because they're in danger. And if you actually are Guatemalan and you've walked 1,500 miles to get to a border that you actually consider safe, when you've been offered sanctuary in Mexico, when Guatemala is no longer a problem, if you haven't actually gone into an American base in Mexico to actually apply for refugee status, you turn up at the border and your decision is to go over, under, or around it, you are an invader, and 5,800 people, technically speaking, have the right to shoot you because you're invading a sovereign nation that has not given you permission to come in.
952-78-4000, we go live to the lines. What's your name, where are you calling from, what's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Shazza again. Just thought out a little point, John. Weren't the Mexicans, he's closed down the government, weren't the Mexicans supposed to be paying for this war? What's happening with that one? I'll leave that one with you, love. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Sharon.
Well, I was going to say that, because, John, you know, there's two things. First, short memories and long on the rhetoric about what we're trying to do. First of all, I agree with one. It's very difficult to stop the immigration. I tell you what Trump's not doing. He's not fining the companies that will employ the illegal immigrants. no different to the UK. Most of the illegal immigrants, no, not most, a fair number of illegal immigrants coming into the UK were employed by the cleaning companies and were cleaning hospitals. When the police raided Basildon Hospital, I can honestly tell you, 200 or more people were running across the fields to get away. Nothing was done about the company that was employing them. Illegal immigrants being illegally employed. Now that, and they do nothing about those companies. Well, he's not interested. He's not interested in the issue. He's not interested in that issue at all. This is about him with his power. You know, Sharon's quite right. Short memories. He, in all of his election stuff, and when he first got in, I'm going to make Mexico pay for the wall. He never varied from that. Then all of a sudden, because an election happens and he loses control, he's now confronting an opposition to see how far he can push him. It's got nothing to do with the issue. The issue just happens to be there. So he's saying to him, you agree my budget or else. Now, the stupidity, I think, stupidity, because Spain is walking into it blind, is this inability to have a budget that you can't vary and you can't. Denmark have had it for 5 years because they can't get a coalition government to put a proper budget together to present. So, you know, Trump says, here's the budget. You ain't agreeing the budget. I'm not agreeing the budget unless I get money for the wall. And they're in a no-win situation. They did the same with Obama. They did the same with what's his name? The
Bush, smoothie. Perhaps?
No, his missus. His missus just stood.
Clinton, perhaps?
Clinton. Yeah, this happens on a more than regular basis. The Americans hate it. They should change it, but no government ever changes a system that says we've got a constant budget. The civil service are always there. You pay, you put money in the UK, the money goes into the system to pay for the civil servants. You don't say, oh, the UK budget hasn't been agreed, therefore the civil servants are all unemployed now. Doesn't happen.
What do you think about the fact that Trump has said he might invoke emergency powers and bypass Congress? Does this not put Trump on a worrying, I'm doing this for the good of the country, Congress is blocking me, I am the commander-in-chief, I take charge?
He was elected to do what he's doing. He very clear on his platform, and the fact of saying the Mexicans are going to pay for it, I have no idea how he's going to do that. But I do something.
Given the power to go to this Senate and say, you agree my budget that includes the wall.
Yeah, but
because in his election stuff, he said quite clearly, I will make the Mexican government pay for it, even though we all knew he couldn't do it. He went to the Mexican government and they went, yeah.
No, he didn't say when they were going to pay for it. The simple fact is, a very interesting thing happens at the end of this month if he doesn't actually release a budget. Welfare payments will be affected.
Right then, going live to the lines at 952-784-4000. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles. It's Sean from Fuengirola.
Good morning, Sean.
Good morning to John. Well done. Stellar performance today, John. Alf, some good comments as well. And even Juan Carlos, with whom I profoundly disagree on most things and to do with the EU, some good stuff too. I just wanted to say, the border situation with President Trump. One of you said that everybody wants to have sensible immigration. It's not true. It's absolutely not true. For example, not only in the United States, where they have these dreadful sanctuary cities, which are full of criminals that cause terrible trouble, and it's very much in the vested interests of the Democratic politicians to continue these sanctuary cities because they are a captive voting bloc. In the same way, and it is Machiavellian from the highest levels, that we had the situation in the 1960s, which I've talked about in America, where Lyndon Johnson decided to lock in the black vote for the next 200 years. And the way he did that, of course, was welfare and kicking the men out of the house. So it's Machiavellian, it's bad news, and Trump is absolutely right to do what he's doing. The idea that he might have to invoke emergency powers, completely correct. 5 billion, by the way, is peanuts in macroeconomic terms, absolute peanuts. It and it will pay for itself many times over, as he said. We're not just talking immigration, remember, as has been pointed out by Peter and others. We're looking at human trafficking, very much including child trafficking. It's a much more profitable business, by the way, or even more profitable than drug trafficking, which is another problem, because a child can not only be raped and molested multiple times, but in the end, when they're killed by these evil paedophiles, and there are plenty of them, this is not fantasy stuff, this comes from the very elites, then they just harvest their body parts. It's an evil, evil trade. It is part of the invasion, and the word invasion is absolutely correct. If people want to come into America, they do it by merit. It's as simple as that. And by the way, it costs 12 times as much. Where you do have genuine refugees, and very few of them are genuine refugees, there's plenty of bogus kids, but where you have genuine refugees, then they should be, wherever possible, looked after in their own countries. You can ring fence things, you can get multi-globalist, or not that I like globalists, but you can get international organizations in there to help, and it's 12 times cheaper to look after a refugee in his or her own country, or even near his or her own country, than it is in the West.
Sean,
so this is bogus stuff.
Thank you for calling into the last 6 minutes of the show. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles Brown.
Morning, Jason.
Yes. How are you? Are you all right?
Very well. Happy New Year, mate. Into the last six minutes of the show.
Same to you. Listen, we have a world in flux, don't we? We've got a transient population. You can't legislate your way out of a big hole. The problem, you can attack the symptoms by building walls and trying to solve stuff politically, but the problem is fundamental. We have a society that's breaking down. People are feeling need to flee various areas in the world for various reasons. The problem is one of civilization as a whole, and all these are just symptoms that we're talking about and attacking. Donald Trump's a businessman, like he runs the presidency like a boardroom, doesn't he?
Indeed.
But the politicians are no better. If you look at how many black politicians are there in Britain, start looking at home. How many black politicians are there in the Houses of Parliament? But on the other side of the coin, Britain's been taking immigrants since and refugees since the Second World War, and the country is basically at capacity. So you also have to be pragmatic about these things. This is a very complex problem, and there's no easy solution to this one.
Thank you.
It's one fundamental, yeah.
Thank you for your call in, Jason. Going very, very quickly to the lines as well. Good morning, caller, live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Kate Gosbunker.
Yes, Kate.
Two or three things. The last call, I think his name's Sean, came out with some very objectionable, in the sense of contentious, statements that I think if you could...
All viewpoints are well... Listen, all viewpoints are welcome. Not all viewpoints are the opinion of TRE.
No. I was going to request that you come back to this point, because the overall issue of immigration has got a lot to do with climate change and how some parts of the world are getting less easy to live in, and there's therefore likely to be a continuum. You know, it needs a serious look at... But not slander. I think that what the caller did was accuse the Democrats of actually artificially building it up. Anyway, you know, one would have to listen again to the tape. But I think some of the things he said were slanderous in a technical sense.
Thank you very much for the call in there, Kate.
TRE.radio. Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Yes, very, very quickly, getting out of time. Just some quick thoughts. Trump's idea of a national emergency would be an abuse of power. The influx of immigrants has not increased since he came to office. The figures he's throwing around are unsubstantiated. He's doing it purely for political reasons, an attempt to get re-elected. It's only a handful in the big picture there. I would go on to more of these emails, but we are going to run out of time. It's been a busy and very, very busy and very eventful, as always, viewpoint. Oh, a quick one. Mexico will pay eventually, believe me, via taxes, and no financial report. Ask Israel. Walls work. Trump is 100% right. Something tells me that this one will run and run and run. Almost out of time. It's been a pleasure and privilege to bring you the first viewpoint of 2019. My thanks to my guests, John Harper.
Yaho, yeah. Looking that for- was Yaho, not yeah. Yavol.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for that one, John.
Close enough.
Also to Alf Brewer.
Yeah, it was close enough, John. Thank you.
And of course, to Juan Carlos.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
This show will be repeated at 6 o'clock. We're going live to the BBC after this.
The views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.